So, hello, so I'm going to call the Faculty Senate meeting into order today for Wednesday, November 17th, 2021. Pat, do we have a quorum for today?
We do have a quorum, and just a couple reminders. Be sure to fill out the attendance slip that is at your place, and then leave it at your place, and we'll collect it after the meeting. Another microphone reminder today. Remember, the meeting today is being recorded. So even though we might be able to hear you physically in this room, we ask you to use a microphone. Otherwise, that will be completely inaudible on the recording. So if you want to make a comment or ask a question, just approach the microphone. And if you tell us your name and the constituency you're representing, that helps too. Thanks.
All right, let's move on to adoption of the agenda. Can I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda for today? All right. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. Any abstentions? All right. Adoption of the agenda. We'll move on to now the minutes. So can I have a motion to approve the minutes from the October 27th, 2020 meeting? And with that, can I have a motion and a second, please? All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. Any abstentions? All right, we approve the minutes. So Pat, do we have any public comment for today?
No public comment.
All right. Faculty Senate President announcements. I'm just going to make again, just for everyone's notice, that tomorrow is the Board of Trustees meeting. They have their committee meetings, and also at 1:30 tomorrow is the special Board of Trustees meeting, and that's where President Lisa Freeman will be giving her university goals presentation to the Board of Trustees. All right. That's the only thing I have. So we'll move on to items for Faculty Senate to consider. Well, I'd like you to welcome Matt Streb, Chief of Staff, to the President and the Liaison to the BOT. Matt's going to give us a little update on some of the COVID information and then take some questions. Yep. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's great to be back at a Faculty Senate meeting, although I have to say I'm not used to being at a Faculty Senate meeting in this room. Usually, when I was at a Faculty Senate, we were up in the Sky Room, but it's great to be back in person to see everybody. I'm happy to answer whatever questions you have about COVID. I figured I would talk very briefly about probably the two most frequent questions that I get regarding COVID, and that is related to our mask policy and also our vaccine policy. But again, I'm happy to answer any COVID-related questions you have. So the first thing we get all the time is, how much longer are we going to have to be in these? And what I want you to be aware of is that our decisions regarding masks are based on three different things that we have to look at and follow. The first is that we have a statewide mask mandate that the governor has instituted. So that's the first thing that we're looking at. The second thing is we have a separate mandate that the governor has instituted in K through 12 in terms of mask wearing in the classroom. And then the third thing also is the CDC's transmission rate in the different regions. And so, you know, when we make the decisions about, are we going to be in masks in classrooms? Are we going to be in masks in the home student center? What is our mask policy? Those are the things that we're looking at, right? A lot of times we've heard the last couple weeks that maybe the governor would be ready to lift that mask mandate. I want to be clear that if that happens, that doesn't mean that the university automatically would go ahead and lift the mask mandate as well. But it's, I want to be very clear, we have to have a mask mandate while we have the executive order in place. I don't think that you are going to see the governor lift that mask mandate anytime soon. He had talked at one point about potentially doing it in time for the holidays. What we've seen since then is a rise in cases again, not only here on campus, but certainly in the state of Illinois and nationally. And most epidemiologists expect that we're going to see another wave of cases in January and February next year. So I'd be very surprised if Governor Pritzker lifts that mask mandate anytime soon. I'll be even more surprised if he lifts the K through 12 mask mandate. And I want to be really clear too, the relationship we have with our instructors and faculty unions says that we follow the K through 12 mask mandate, all right? But if the governor does lift the K through 12 mask mandate, our faculty and instructors would still have the opportunity to require masks in their classroom. And then lastly, the CDC guidance. Right now, DeKalb County, like most of the state of Illinois, is in a state of high transmission, which would say that it's all, you know, the CDC recommends that all individuals, vaccinated or not, be in a mask when indoors. There's some interesting discussions going on right now. That's based on cases in an area, cases in a county in this case. There's been some interesting discussions about whether cases are the appropriate measure right now of how problematic the virus is, because as vaccine rates go up, some people are arguing it's really things more like hospitalization rates and that type of thing that we should be looking at, not overall cases. But that's, I just wanted to give you a sense of kind of what we're looking at when we're making decisions about whether we're going to continue to have the mask mandate or not. So I know for some of you that will probably be a relief. For others of you, that will be very frustrating. But I also just wanted to make sure that you're aware of kind of what we're looking at. The other thing is the vaccine. I just looked this morning. I get the numbers each morning when I come in, and right now, as of this morning, 93.4% of our faculty and staff who are on campus, working on campus, are fully vaccinated. 87.3% of our students in the fall semester who are in-person classes are fully vaccinated. I think most of you know that we have a vaccine mandate for our students. Last June, we announced that mandate. But there was we had the usual medical and religious exemptions that we put in. But because when we made the announcement of the vaccine mandate at the time, there had been no vaccine that had full FDA approval, we gave our students the opportunity to take what we called the personal exemption. And that was essentially, I don't want to take the vaccine right now because there is not a vaccine that's under full FDA approval. But once full FDA approval is granted, I'll have to get a vaccine. So for the spring, I want to be very clear. We don't have, many places in the state have a testing mandate. We don't have a testing mandate. We have an actual vaccine mandate. So starting in the spring, no one in our classes, or in-person classes, I want to be really clear about that, will be able to be in an in-person class unless they are fully vaccinated or have a medical or religious exemption. The personal exemption is no longer an option. So our students right now are going out and they're registering, all right? And when they register, we talked about a variety of different ways that we could do this. We are allowing people who are not fully vaccinated to register for classes. And there's a couple of reasons why we chose to do that. But when they go to register, they have a hold on their account and they have to attest to say that I understand that by January 7th, I will either have to be fully vaccinated and have that card uploaded through my NIU, or I'll have to have a medical or religious exemption, or I won't be able to take in-person classes. What will happen on January 7th is we will go through and we will run our list, and anybody who we do not have a vaccine for or a medical or religious exemption will be removed from in-person classes. If they try to get back in on January 8th, we run the report every single day. And so that's kind of where we are on our vaccine policy. So yeah.
Hi, I'm Tim Sullivan from the math department. What about, we're gonna have some courses next semester where they're online, but they have to come in four times a semester for exams.
Yep, yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things, let me just say too, it's really easy, although not necessarily popular, but really easy to say we have a vaccine mandate. It's very complicated to actually implement that mandate. And so one of the challenges we have is, what is an in-person class? I mean, most of us know that an in-person class is, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, I go to DuSable 459, take my intro to political science class at 9:30 or whatever, right? And you've got some classes that are very clearly online classes. The whole class is conducted online. I could take the class in California if I wanted, right? Would never have to be on campus. But we have a lot of other, how do you look at an internship? How do you look at clinicals? How do you look at hybrid courses? How do you look at staggered courses? So what we're looking at is anything that has an in-person component, all right, is considered an in-person class. And so your hybrid class, even if you come to campus, it's, you know, maybe it's only we have exams three times a semester. That's the only time we're coming to campus. There's still an in-person component to that. So that would be considered an in-person class. Does that answer your question? Okay, perfect. Absolutely. So that in a nutshell, that's kind of where we are on vaccines. We're working really hard. We get students are uploading vaccine cards every day. We're still seeing, you know, a dozen people a day upload those cards, which is what I said, that the vaccine rate goes up every day. But right now, as of this morning, we're at 87.3%. So I'm certainly, that's kind of what I thought I'd share. I'm certainly happy to answer any other questions anybody has.
Thank you, Dana Bardolph, Anthropology. So you just mentioned the students are still uploading vaccine cards every day, but does that mean then with that January 7th date, they'll be running all the numbers? Like that is the deadline to have them uploaded?
So January 7th, what will happen is, so I want to be really clear too. So anybody who has a medical religious exemption, all right, we'll still have to test every week next semester. So we still have our surveillance testing, and anybody who is not fully vaccinated right now in a classroom is testing every week. But yeah, so what right now, let's pretend that I'm not fully vaccinated. I took the personal exemption, okay? I'm testing, I have in-person classes right now. I'm testing each week. But when I go to register for my classes, I'll attest that, you know, I'm gonna be vaccinated. If I'm not fully vaccinated though by January 7th, every in-person class that I register for, I will be removed from. Does that help clarify?
Yes, I just wanted to understand why folks were still uploading vaccine cards, if that was because of personal exemption or
because they weren't being checked
all semester.
Yeah, correct.
Thank you.
Because, well, a couple, two things. One, we do have new students coming in the spring, right?
Okay.
So that would be, that's a significant number of them. But we did have about 1,000 students who took the personal exemption. So, and we've seen that number whittled down over the course of the semester, but we still find people that have waited to get vaccinated, and they're able to continue to be in that class this semester, but going forward, they won't be able to be.
Great, thank you so much.
The other thing too I want to say is we do find there's not a lot, but there's still a handful of people that are actually fully vaccinated that haven't told us they're fully vaccinated. So if you know somebody that's in that situation, please make sure that we're aware of that, because if we don't have records that they are fully vaccinated, they'll be removed from those in-person classes. Any other questions?
Good afternoon, Matty Wise, Engineering Technology. About those who have medical or religious excuses, do they still have to have weekly tests?
Yes.
COVID tests?
Yeah, anybody who has received an approved exemption has to go through weekly surveillance testing.
Yep. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Good afternoon, Biagio Palese, OMIS department. I have a question regarding, like, fully vaccinated is still considered those people that received two doses. What about booster shots?
Yeah, excellent question.
And so, I have a follow-up. What about action that will be taken to people that don't properly wear the mask in class?
Right.
If any, because I've seen, like, throughout the semester, people start putting down the mask and so on and so forth. And
yeah, really good question. So we're not requiring the booster shot. We certainly are strongly encouraging people to get the booster shot. I want to be really clear. First of all, it looks like the FDA is going to approve boosters at the end of this week for everybody. But as an institution of higher education, you all are already eligible for the booster shot. So if you haven't got your booster yet, I'd certainly encourage you to do that. We are not going to require the booster shot. Certainly at this time, and I'll be honest with you, I don't anticipate that we will require the booster shot going forward, but as happens with this pandemic, you know, every time we say something, information changes, but that's kind of where we are right now, is we not require the booster shot. In terms of the masks, yeah, it's a pain, right? Chad, I don't know if you want to speak any more about this with the agreement that we came with the faculty and instructors unions, but you know, essentially, every time I walk through the Home Student Center, I let me just say too very quickly, I was just at Indiana University over this past weekend, and they have a mask mandate on campus. They do not have a statewide mask mandate, but in the city of Bloomington, they have a mask mandate that applies to IU Bloomington. And while there was a mask mandate there, I can tell you that you saw very few masks, right? When I walked through the Indiana Memorial Union, which is our equivalent of the HSC, almost no one was in a mask. Certainly, you know, when I go over to the HSC, every time I see somebody that's not in a mask, I ask them to put it on. I'm not stupid, though. I know that when I ask them to put it on and I walk away, it's very possible that this is what you're going to get 2 minutes later. You know, so we can, you know, I think that we just have to, again, create that culture of that's the expectation, and you know, but there's very little we can do to actually go out and police the mass. Now, the classroom's a little bit different, Chad. I don't know if you want to, I'm happy to speak to it, but if you would rather speak. I mean, in the classroom, I think most of you know, right, that you have the ability to, if somebody comes in your classroom and refuses to wear a mask, you should ask them to leave, but you do not have to be in a situation where you teach that course. If the environment becomes disruptive or whatever, certainly, you know, you would cancel that class for the day. We then put that student through the student conduct process. That I realize that that's probably the extreme case, right? And so to your question, you know, I could be sitting in a mask and I'm sitting here like this throughout my, I mean, I don't want to have to stop every 2 minutes and say, pull up your mask, pull up your mask, pull up your mask. So it is difficult. There's no doubt about it. I think it just has to be something that, again, first day of class, you really reiterate the importance of why we're wearing masks, you know, your expectation regarding it and that type of thing. And Chad, like I said, I'll let you ask, answer.
Thanks, Matt. That's well said. The one thing that I would add from the classroom perspective is that you would always have the option to file a student conduct complaint, you know, and have that investigated by the Office of Student Conduct if that became a kind of ongoing challenge with students in your class. You probably try to be rational and try to be empathetic, and you know, but at some point I realized in your classroom you're going to get tired of over and over again telling the same student to pull up their mask, and so certainly student conduct could be involved to assist as well. And the last thing I'd add is that it's something that UFA leadership and I have talked about regularly at labor management meetings. And as you said, they're not simple solutions, but trying to work together to address issues.
I still think our mask, and again, I was in Georgia earlier this fall as well in Atlanta at Georgia Tech. They don't have a mask mandate. It's perfectly optional there. And I can tell you that no one on that campus was wearing a mask. And so, you know, when I come back here, I feel very comfortable with the amount of compliance we have. It is certainly not 100%. It's certainly a pain. I get that. Totally get that. But I do think that our students, for the most part, are doing a good job of making sure they're complying with what we're asking them to do.
Anything else?
I just, again, very quickly, I just want to thank you. I know this is not the easiest environment to teach in. This may sound strange to you, but I actually am really missing being in the classroom right now, even if I had to sit there and tell people all the time to keep moving up, pulling up your mask. But I really want to thank you for what you're doing inside our classrooms. I can tell you that our students are thrilled to be back in person. They're incredibly happy. Whenever I talk to them, they're so excited about the, even if they're in masks, they're excited about the fact that they're there, they're around their friends, they're learning, you know, they're seeing their professors in person, they know who you are. And so thanks for all that you're doing, because I know it's not an easy environment with which to teach. So with that, I'll, unless there's any other questions, I'll let you get on with the rest of your meeting.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to B. So Merlinette Griffin is here. She is our interim ombudsperson, and she's just going to talk a little bit about the role of the NIU ombudsperson. And if you have questions, we can ask her some questions.
My name is Merlinette Griffin. I am serving as the university ombudsperson. I do want to say thank you for inviting me to speak with you all this afternoon. I am going to go ahead and just share that this information for some of you may be an introduction as you're new to the university, but for others, it may be a reintroduction of the information that I'm going to share, our office as a resource. And so you may wonder, well, what is an ombudsperson? We do help assist with university-related issues and concerns. And a couple of things about our office, we are confidential. So that means that no one will know about the conversation that the visitors and I have unless they decide to share that information with someone. However, if there is imminent risk of harm to themselves or someone else, that is information I am required to share out. Although I don't share any specific information that will identify any one individual, I do share trends with administration at the end of the academic year. If I'm finding that something is reoccurring time and time again, we do want to get ahead of it. Well, at that point, we do want to get in tune with this so that we can make some positive changes. We are informal. So once someone speaks to us, if during that conversation, we find that they would need more of a formal process or a grievance process that is not initiated or facilitated in our office. However, I can assist with helping folks figure out where that process will start and what it may look like. We are also independent of any of the university's administrative structures. And then finally, it is always my goal to be neutral. So when people come to speak with us, and the information that they are sharing, I want to be able to look at the situation from all points of view. And based on what is shared, I want to also be able to provide resources and feedback that is impartial. Okay? And so you may wonder, well, who needs an ombuds person? Who do you serve? What population? And so we serve the entire NIU community, faculty, students, and staff. They can all come and visit with our office. And so this is not inclusive, but these are some examples of who would need to visit with the ombuds person. So if you know that there is a policy or procedure, but you're not just sure how it could be related to your circumstance, that's a conversation we can have. Or if there is a policy and procedure and you believe that it is being implemented unfairly in your situation, let's have a conversation. If you find that there's times when you're wanting to have a conversation, but it's difficult to have that conversation with someone, I'm always willing to be a mediator so that both sides can be heard and there can be resolution, okay? Some of the issues and concerns that our office sees would include discrimination, incivility, financial concerns, roommate issues, housing concerns. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot here is food insecurity. Just wanted some support there. And then some interpersonal conflict, culture conflict. And so there's a myriad of issues that bring visitors into our office. And so, again, that's not all inclusive either. If you do find that you've got some concerns and you're just unsure, feel free to reach out to our office. And then here are some of the things a little bit further, what we do and what we don't do. And so we will listen to the situation and provide feedback based on it, analyze it, answer any questions that people may have. As I already shared, be a mediator as necessary. Every situation, unfortunately, is not going to resolve in a manner that perhaps you would like it to, but if we can come to a space of fairness, that is a goal of mine. Some of the things we don't do, I cannot change policies and procedures. However, I can, like I said before, share out the trends that I'm seeing to be able to impact the policies and procedures that are in place. I cannot act as an agent of notice to the university. So if someone's planning to leave the university, that is something that that individual will have to inform the university themselves. I cannot participate in any formal or grievance processes. And it is also important to say that I cannot supersede any other university officials decision. Sometimes people come and they say, fix this or fix that, and I can't always fix everything, but I am here as a resource. I can provide information. I can help figure out which way is the best route to approach a situation or a conversation. And if you yourself cannot benefit from the resource of our office, however, you're working with students or your colleagues and you find that they're in a situation or a circumstance, please, please refer them to our office, because we do help students, help faculty, help staff. And it's disheartening when students, faculty, and staff get the husky shuffle because they don't know who can help them. If you are able to send them to our office, I think that would be a great place to start. It is also important to note that I also work with EAP as well as faculty personnel advisor and SPS personnel advisor when one is in place. So I work with the personnel advisors also and the union reps. So just keeping that in mind, knowing that we are a wide network so you all can get the resources that you need. contact information. We're located 6th floor in the Student Center. Our phone number is there. Office email is there. And my personal email is also listed. Okay. Questions, concerns?
Well, anyone I have done any my questions job. For Merlinette?
Oh, I was thorough. Don't pressure them, Pete.
I won't. I won't make them ask you anything.
Thank you all.
So number C is something I was just going to kind of question. So just to give you a little background information on this. So part of the tenure and promotion process for tenured faculty is, at most institutions is conducting research and then publishing your findings in journals and manuscripts. One of the issues that came to me recently was that some people had been encountering delays or other obstacles in getting their manuscripts peer reviewed or published during COVID and even beforehand. What I wanted to do was just for take a few minutes just to hear from anyone that might have had a similar experience I would want to share. I'll give an example. I recently just submitted one to two journals, and within 1 or 2 days, they got back to me saying, I don't have reviewers, please submit to somewhere else. And it was just a process where I actually had to go through 4 or 5 journals just to find one that said I had reviewers that was willing to look at the paper. And I spoke with a couple other faculty members, with Beth Ingram, and we just thought this was something I just wanted to pose as a discussion topic to see if anyone had encountered an issue like this. And if you could share, I'd be happy. Or you can send me an email, too, if you would like to.
Well, my name is Arlene Ketty from the School of Health Studies. I have had a situation like that. I sent something into a journal, an article into a journal. Maybe it was in August of 2020. They haven't given me a decision yet. There's been a rewrite and resubmit, and they're still waiting on it. It's been after the rewrite and resubmit, it's been months and months.
Thank you.
Dana Bardolph again from Anthropology. That has also happened to me in that I've gotten contact from editors of journals that they're having trouble finding people to review the manuscripts. I've also been guilty of taking a long time, longer than usual, to review other colleagues' manuscripts. And as an untenured faculty member, I'm wondering if there is any consideration of these types of issues that might merit further tenure clock extension discussions or like some degree of flexibility I also submitted a paper this summer and heard nothing with respect to updates, and it's almost December. And I think that this is a big problem that's going to impact date of submission. We might be 1 or 2 years out before it appearing in print.
Thank you for sharing, because that's what happened when in our department meeting. We had the conversation about what if there was a taking a delay, what would the department do, our department specifically, do to care for that situation, especially for our untenured faculty. Thank you. Anyone else?
This is Lisa Liberty, College of Education. One conversation that we've had in our department is people that have had articles accepted, but then they don't get published for a year, year and a half, 2 years. And so how does that count in faculty service reports? And then for those that are going up for tenure, can that count and meet the requirements that are outlined in the policies and procedures, or does that not count when going up for tenure? So that's another thing to take into consideration, I think.
Thank you. All right. No, thank you for the information. All right. So with that, we'll move on to the consent agenda. We have no consent agenda for today, so we move on to unfinished business. So the proposed amendment to the Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 2, Officers of the Faculty Senate, Article 8, Personal Review Responsibilities, and Article 14, Faculty and SPS Personal Advisor, which are listed on pages 7 to 11. So before we begin the discussion, can I have a motion to and a second to approve the proposed amendment? Motion, Soroka. Can I have a second? Yep. You need a microphone, please. Can you get a microphone?
Yeah, I just want a clarification about who's making the proposal, who's seconding the proposal.
Well, we're having the proposal moved to the floor and now we're going to have the discussion about it.
And who made the proposal and who seconded it?
Dave Soroka motioned it.
And
Jordan Hu. Jordan Hu seconded it. So now it's open for discussion.
Hi, this is David Valentiner from Psychology. I think Peter, we exchanged a couple emails about this. When I received the new language in Article 14, I forwarded it to some people in the union, including Kerry Ferris, the president of the union, and Robert Tatara, the grievance officer, and asked them for comment. And I did hear back from Kerry saying that she thought it was the language was illegal. Particularly the first paragraph. I think I gave you that information in an email. So I just wanted to at least make everybody aware that there are concerns that I have that this isn't aligned with what the union believes should happen.
Any other discussion? Thank you, David.
Please use the microphone.
You have to use the microphone, please.
Matthew Smith from World Languages and Cultures. I'm just asking David just to clarify a little bit.
Yeah, I think that the opening paragraph of Article 14 has some language that has to do with whether people are part of the bargaining unit or not, and that they had to somehow approach. I don't know, you can see the language there. So after Kerry sent me these, I did hear from, she had also forwarded it to a staff person in the union who had commented that perhaps there's something that people are trying to do here about clarifying that the faculty advisor wouldn't be advising people on issues that are covered by the union contract, but that the wording maybe lacked clarity or could be tightened around that. But as it looks there, it looks like it's, at least my initial read of it was that it may be restricting people who are members of the union or part of the bargaining unit from availing themselves of services of the faculty advisor. Does that provide the clarification you wanted?
Thank you, David. Does anyone else have discussion on this? No. Well, we have the motion, so okay. I think it's time to take a vote on this motion.
Okay. So the first thing I'm going to do is show you the list of voting members for today. So if you are on this list or you're here subbing for someone who is on this list, we'd like you to pick up a clicker in the back of the room. And while you're doing that, the typical reminder that I like to give you, no need to turn the clickers on or off. They activate automatically. In a minute, I'm going to give you an option to select one for yes. You agree with the motion to approve the proposal. Two, no, you don't agree with the motion to approve the proposal. Or three, abstain. And once you click that number on your clicker, you should see a happy face or a check mark. So now give me a minute to open that up. Okay, so that should be open now, and you can click 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for abstain. Anybody need more time? Okay. Okay, so we need 2/3 of those voting. So some of you are probably better at math than I am. Do we have?
Probably not.
I think we do.
Okay.
Well, that does not pass,
yeah,
right?
So the motion does not pass.
Do you agree with that? Harold, do you agree that that
yes.
does not pass?
It fails, yes.
Okay.
Sure. All right.
Okay, back up to reports.
Mm-hmm. Are you there? All right, so we'll move on to reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. Do you have that thing from the IBHA? So Linda's not here, and she wasn't going to have a report, but she emailed me this morning with some interesting information. So this is what she got in her mailbox today. So I'm just going to read over it real quick, some of the highlights. So it's the higher, so Higher Ed Funding Commission holds inaugural meeting with the focus on equity will help to determine the financial future of Illinois' public university. So in Springfield, this was established by state lawmakers. It's a newly formed commission on equitable public university funding, and they met this week to hold the open discussion on how Illinois public universities are funded. Has some interesting comments. We have the historic opportunity to truly affect change in the state's higher education system and ensure that all students have a chance to achieve their post-secondary goals. So down at the bottom paragraph, it says, this group's work is aligned with the state's new higher education strategic plan, a thriving Illinois higher education path to equity, sustainability, and growth, which outlines the need to invest in higher education in a way that is equitable, stable, and sufficient through a set of core principles that will be the foundation of a new funding approach. If you look at the members that are on the board, we have two members. So Lisa, President Lisa Friedman is a member of this commission, and so was our own Simone Weffler, associate professor from the Department of Sociology. And so Linda just wanted me to share this with you, that she received this information this morning from the IBHE about this new, the new inaugural meeting of this commission. So we will move on to B, which is University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees. Holly, Felicia, do you have anything? The only thing I have, once again, is the meeting for the Board of Trustees is tomorrow. And they will have the three separate committee meetings in the morning, and then they will have the special Board of Trustees meeting. You can find the information and the agendas for the times on their website, on the NIU BOT website. So Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee, we have no report. For the Rules, Governance, Election Committee, we have no report. Social Justice Committee, Ishmael, do you have a report? No, you do not. And Student Government Association, you guys, all right. So we have a report from Devlin and Dallas.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. For those who don't know me, my name is Dallas Douglas. I'm the Speaker of the SGA Senate. This is Devlin Collins, who's the President of SGA. Currently, we are looking towards the spring semester, so we're focusing on our calendar of events for the spring, which positions we need to fill, how to organize ourselves for that semester. We have our final Senate meeting at 5 p.m. this Sunday, the 21st, in the Capitol Room of the HSC. We are gearing up for our election season, which is one of the things that demands a lot of our time and energy throughout the year. We're looking to fill our election commissioner role. So we're actually putting the call out for applications from students. This is a paid position that would run from the time of appointment until the end of March when the elections conclude. The role's responsibility is essentially to oversee the election procedure, organize debates, and ensure there's no misconduct during the election cycle. So if any of you know any students or have ideas for departments or mailing lists to reach out to for election commissioners, that would be much appreciated. Any questions about that or suggestions can be sent to either myself or Devlin. I also wanted to say, so from the students as the representatives, I wanted to thank all of you so much for the work that you've done. The struggles that we faced during the pandemic, we know that you're facing them too. We see you, we really appreciate all of the lengths that our faculty are going to for us. We appreciate your grace and your kindness. And keep it up. Thank you. And happy holidays to everybody.
It's a little early for happy holidays, in my opinion, but thank you, Dallas. I just want to echo what Dallas was saying. We understand it's been a really tough semester in terms of, just in terms of us doing our jobs with the hiring issues that we've had and things of that nature, especially with SGA kind of ourselves restructuring a bit. And with our policies and everything. So we just really thank you all with your patience and working with us as we're trying to get things back on track this semester. But next semester, we do plan on really networking more with a lot of other departments and offices. And we really want to have a chance next semester to kind of rebrand SGA in terms of how it works and partners with a lot of you. We know that a lot of you only see us kind of in faculty senate, university council, some of these higher up meetings, but we want there to be a chance for you all to connect more with students, both on our level of professionalism and just students that just want to see how you all operate on a day-to-day basis or how we operate. Next semester, we're really looking forward to some of the things that we have in store, some of the plans that we're trying to implement on campus. Again, just thank you all for everything that you do. And again, just happy holidays, like Dallas said.
Thank you, guys. All right, if anybody has questions for them, sure. Yep, no worries. Move on to Operating Staff Council. We have no report.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we have a short report. Hi, everybody. My name is Zach Birch. I work in Housing and Residential Services, and I serve as the Secretary for the Operating Staff Council. The Operating Staff Council has reorganized itself after a number of our staff members left the institution. So we are continuing to look for different people to join the Operating Staff Council. So if you have operating staff members in your areas that are looking to get involved in shared governance, please refer them to the Operating Staff Council. Additionally, as the holidays are coming up, we are looking to increase the awareness of our Operating Staff Council Emergency Fund. So if people have a couple extra dollars that they would be willing to donate to the Emergency Fund, we would greatly appreciate it. More information is on the Operating Staff Council website. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Support staff, supportive professional staff council. Felicia, no report? All right. So move on to information items. One of the last things on information items, if you look at the dates, of course, this is the last meeting for the calendar year 2021. So we will meet again in 2022 on January 26th in this room. The rest of our meetings for next year also will all, as of right now, we're all planned to be in this room. All right, that, any questions? All right, then I'm going to ask, can I have someone make a motion in a second to adjourn the Faculty Senate meeting today? Second, Ben. All right. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. Any abstentions? Meeting adjourned.